So today is June 30, 2050, in Sasana era 2559. For the yogis who are practicing intensively at the Tathagata Meditation Center, Siaro have been explaining the Dhamma talk, a topic given by the Buddha to the Subhyama Deva. So today, Siaro will explain in detail about the Bhujja, which the Buddha mentioned to Subhyama to develop, so that the Subhyama Deva can overcome the sorrow and the limitation he currently encountered. So here also some yogis are newcomer. For them, Siaro repeated this Dhamma talk briefly. So to repeat this story in brief, so there was Subrahma Deva, the celestial being. He was enjoying a blissful life with the 1,000 Devi, like the celestial queens. So one day they were enjoying in a heavenly garden, picking up heavenly flowers. And on that moment, half of the devis disappeared, and then quiet. So the Subhyama Deva check what happened, what's going on to my queens. And then he found out. They were dead and reborn into the lower state, the hair. So he was really shocked. And then he checked himself, his fate, and the remaining Devi's fate. And he found out they also soon will pass away and be reborn in the same woeful state. So they are really scared. So he came down to the Buddha and requested to teach him how to overcome such a extreme sorrow and limitation, how to overcome unhappiness. And then the Buddha answered, and so Bhujja, Tapasa. And first of all, the Buddha said, you have to develop the Eightfold Noble Path so that you can experience the Four Noble Truth. You realize Four Noble Truth. For that, you have to make great effort, viriya. And then, as a prerequisite or preliminary requirement, the Buddha said, you must observe the sense restraint. You have to guard your senses against from the mental defilements. And in this regard, another kinds of sila morality, four kinds of sila morality were also explained. And then Subhyama, the celestial beings, and was explained how to develop how to observe the sense restraint. And then, secondly, the Buddha said how to develop the Eightfold Noble Path to experience, to realize the Bhujjanga, to realize Megaphala enlightenment. So today, Siaro would like to explain Bhujja. Bhujja means the Eightfold Noble Path that can lead us to the realization of the Four Noble Truth. So to realize the Four Noble Truth, it is necessary to develop Eightfold Noble Path. Before we can develop Eightfold Noble Path, Through the Eightfold Noble Path, we can experience the Nibbana, ultimate peacefulness or Nibbana. And before that, it's also necessary for us to develop Pobabhaga Mega, meaning preliminary path, preliminary Noble Path. So Pobabhaga Mega, preliminary path, is also of eight factors, like Noble Eightfold Path, and it includes the three factors of the morality, like Samma Vajja, right speech, Samma Kammada, right action, Samma Ajiva, right livelihood. So as a Sila Makhenga, yogis here have undertaken the precepts. So yogi here are regarded to have already observed or undertaken these precepts. So they already fulfilled this three sila mekenga, three sila factors. And when we are practicing meditation, we develop the three factors related to belonging to the concentration, and two mental factors, two path factors belonging to wisdom or inside knowledge. So samadhi, three samadhi factors, two wisdom factor. So regarding three samadhi factor, wisdom factor, Sayaro expounded Samma Vayama, right effort, yesterday. So today, Sayaro will expound the remaining three, mindfulness, concentration, and vipassana insight. So when we apply arouse our energy, kind of driving force to develop the continuous mindfulness, we become aware of the nature of the objects, that is sati, mindfulness. So to understand what sati or mindfulness means comprehensively, it's good to learn for us about sati from three aspects, is in terms of its characteristics and functions and manifestation. So sati, its characteristics is apilapana lekhana, apilapana lekhana in Pali. It is this means not floating on the surface. Concomitant mental factors, mind and mental factor, not to float on the surface. That means sati help mind and mental factor get deep into the object, not floating on the surface, not just being aware of the object superficially, but deeply penetrating deep into the object. That's the characteristics of this sati or mindfulness. So for example, when we sit and note the rising, falling of the abdomen, so we are supposed to note the rising, falling from the beginning to the end. So when abdomen rises, we try to be aware of the phenomena arising, starting from the first movement arising until the arising ends. We have to follow all the way from the beginning to the end. And then we can see the progressive changes of the phenomena. We become aware of the real phenomena changing progressively. That means this sati, its characteristics. So when we put, when we throw something light, like a drying fruit, into the river or into the water, it will be floating on the surface. It won't get down into the water. So then, unlike that way, when we observe the object, our mindfulness should not be floating like a drying fruit on the water surface. It must penetrate into the object's true nature. It's like you throw stone into the water. The stone get down into the water, straight into the deep bottom. So in the same way, sati must be fully focused on the object and penetrating into its true nature. That is the characteristic or the sati in Pali, abhilapana lakkhana. So the function of the sati is called rasa. So sati function in such a way that it keep the object clearly. Sati doesn't allow the object fade away or become vague. So the mind is fully focused on the object, supported by mindfulness, sati. So some yogis, they said when they are noting an object, the object is not clear and vague or fade away, they lose the object. They lose mindfulness of the object. So that means there is no mindfulness, no sati. So if we apply sati, for example, when we are sitting, we know rising, falling of the abdomen, or sitting, touching, or pain, or numbness, and so on. Or whatever we note, so we must be aware of the true nature of the objects. We should not let the object fade away. Object must be clear to our mind. And in case there or if there is a wandering mind, we must be aware of it and note it as it is. So don't let the meditative object or phenomena fade away out of the focus point. That is the function of the sati, mindfulness. And then we should understand mindfulness in terms of manifestation. So its manifestation, it manifests to a yogi in terms of the guardian or guard. In Pali, it is Arakha Pachupatthana. Arakha means guard or guardian. And another alternative, the manifestation is Visaya Bhimukha, mean directing the mind to the object, Visaya Bhimukha. So the first kind of manifestation is quite obvious to the yogi. For example, a yogi, he knows the during sitting, rising, falling, and during the walking, lifting, moving, dropping, and so on. And so when there is a mindfulness, yogi can find mindfulness is a guardian against the external object or external hindrances. So that the how the sati or mindfulness manifests to a yogi. So if yogi are able to note the one object after another continuously. And then mind is well guarded against the external object and mental defilements. And another definition or another form of the manifestation is visaya bhimukha, directing the mind to the object. So you can find the mindfulness to be directing or driving the mind to the object. This is how the mindfulness become manifest to a yogi. So when we are noting rising, falling, so there is a mindfulness behind our noting mind. Mindfulness directing the mind, noting mind to the object, to the rising or to the falling, or lifting, moving, dropping during the walking. The mindfulness directing or driving the mind to the object. So in this way, this mindfulness can manifest to the yogi. That is the manifestation of the mindfulness. If you cannot experience that way, that means you need to make some more effort. Or if you experience the mindfulness walking this way, you should be gratified with that. So in order to focus on the object with the strong mindfulness, the main condition is tirasanya, tirasanya patatana. Tirasanya means the effective recognition or firm, strong recognition. Tirasanya, patatana means immediate cause. So immediate cause of the strong mindfulness is tirasanya, the effective recognition or careful recognition. So this is the reason why we are instructed by Mahasi Siyaro to note the object by labeling or giving the name to the object, so that our perception or our recognition is clear and not vague. So, and also we are highly recommended to use the daily language rather than technical terms like the rising, falling, pain, numbness, aching, touching, knowing, wandering mind. So these are the daily language. We are recommended to use daily language. In the same way, during the walking, also we have to use name and labeling like lifting, moving, dropping, and so on. So by using names or label, we can make the object clearer. We can make our recognition clearer. So that means tirasanya, clearer perception or clearer recognition. This is the immediate cause of the development of mindfulness. So only when we are able to note the object effectively, and then we can discern the true nature of the mind and the body. So however, when our practice mature, concentration and stronger, mindfulness continuous, then we can discern so many phenomena without labeling. We don't need to label it, all the objects. As a naturally labeling will be dropped off. And we become aware of the objects in terms of the characteristics without labeling and naming. But to develop the strong mindfulness, is a labeling or naming of the object is very helpful. So practically, yogi, we find the objects clearly with the strong concentration and mindfulness. And then yogi, we find the naming and the labeling no longer follow this, no longer necessary to develop mindfulness. So when we see the true nature of mind and metta, and without labeling, then the name or labeling will drop or by itself. So there are also many yogis, many meditators, they often ask a question, whether they still need naming or labeling all the time, because they found the naming or labeling is quite confusing to them, because they experience so many phenomena as naming is just troublesome and confusing. So Searo himself also understands from his own experience. So of course, we don't need to name or label when we really aware, when we are really aware of the true phenomena. So Mahasi Searo said, naming, labeling, or noting, or being aware are actually just synonyms. Naming actually means trying to be aware of the object. Noting also the same. And awareness, these are all referred to the same things. So when we really discern mind and matter in their true nature, of course, we don't need any naming or labeling. But there are times when our mind is wandering away, and then we need to reuse naming and labeling method until our mind is settled down and calm down enough to discern the real phenomena. Alternatively, there is another, the immediate cause of the mindfulness is a close observation of the four objects, body, feeling, mind, and general object or Dhamma objects. So when we are really mindful, or when we are making effort in mindfulness by noting one object after another continuously, and then the sati mindfulness will build up. So we are observing four kinds of objects. First of all, kaya, body. So we observe body by noting all our physical actions, walking or sitting or whatever physical action we do, we are noting. That means we are developing awareness of body. And then also feeling, whatever sensation or feeling, good or bad we have, we know them as they really are. And then mind, awareness of mind or consciousness, that we are noting wandering mind or any kinds of thoughts as they really are. And then many others, general objects, we are noting, Dhamma objects. So by observing these four objects closely, the mindfulness come into existence. Mindfulness develops. So this close observation of four objects is also said as the immediate cause of the mindfulness. So to develop the continuous mindfulness, we have to note one object after another continuously, without leaving gap in between. And when we note also the mind, noting mind must be fully focused on the object. So when we are walking, so we lifting, moving, dropping, the mind must be fully focused on the object. The lifting should be concurrent or consistent with the awareness. Awareness should be concurrent or consistent with the object. And then we can discern the true phenomena. So Sanyogi are likely to ask what they are supposed to experience during the walking meditation. The experience the yogi need to have is quite the same as during the sitting meditation. The mind and metta maintain a physical phenomena. So during the walking, when we lift in the foot, and we have to be aware of the lifting concurrently. The lifting of the foot and awareness of it should be consistent, should be concurrent. And in the same way, moving forward and dropping, and the awareness and should be concurrent. And then only then can we develop continuous mindfulness. In the same way, in general activities, so we should be mindful continuously wherever we are, whatever we are doing, do it mindfully. And we may take break time, maybe 10 minutes or 15 minutes. The rest of time, whatever we do, we must do it mindfully. In this way, we can develop continuous mindfulness. When continuous mindfulness is continuous, there will be pure and pure thoughts regarding the desirable or undesirable objects. No more pure thoughts or aversion or desire. This kind of unwholesome thought become purer and purer. So it is very important to observe one object after another continuously. And then we develop the mindfulness, continuous mindfulness, and we experience the blissful state. We may even think about living the whole life with such a blissful mental state. So when we are able to develop the continuous mindfulness, by noting one object after another continuously, we can feel gratified with our experience. That's what we call the piti, the blissful state of the mind, dhamma piti. So in this regard, there is a story of the Venerable Teisa. During the Buddha time, it was just 4 months before the Buddha's pass away. So that there were many monks and arhats, and some ordinary monks. So when they are informed, when they were informed of the Buddha's demise after 4 months, 4 months later. So arhats, the Dhamma Sanvega, the Dhamma related sense of urgency. But the Puthojana, ordinary monks, they cannot control their sorrow and lamentation, so they cried. So such a superior virtuous person like the Buddha, we no longer exist on earth after 4 months. So thinking this way, they cried, they cannot control their sorrow and lamentation. And also there were many meetings and discussions in group among the monks. So monks are discussing what to do, what will be going on when the Buddha pass away, and what we going to do, and so on. But that Venerable Teisa, he thought the other way. So the Buddha going to pass away 4 months after. So I'm a still ordinary monk. I should try my best to become fully enlightened Arhat while the Buddha is present. So he didn't attend to any meeting, or he didn't talk to anybody, or any discussion with anybody. He approached to secluded place and practiced meditation. Then the ordinary monks, they misunderstood his behavior. Look at that monk. He doesn't care about the Buddha. There are many monks. They are really worried about the Buddha's demise, and they really care the Buddha. This monk doesn't bother about the Buddha. Doesn't care. So they blame the monk. And later they reported to the Buddha, and then the Buddha called for the monks and asked the question to make the notion clearer, to clarify what problem is. Then the monks, he explained why he didn't attend any meeting, why he didn't make any discussion with other monks, because he wanted to be enlightened while the Buddha was alive, while the Buddha is present. Then the Buddha said, embracing the monk. So whoever cherish me, whoever love me, should follow the Teisa monk does. The way the Teisa monk practice. So whatever superior of offering, like flower or fragrance or whatever, that kind of offering is quite inferior. The best honor to me would be by practice. So you all should follow the example of the Teisa. You should honor me or love me by practicing meditation. So that's how the Buddha praised the meditating monk. So, and also the Buddha said, when we find the Dhamma Piti, when we take delight in the Dhamma experience, the blissfulness of Dhamma will make you tranquil and peaceful. You will enjoy peacefulness in a secluded place. And then you will experience the upasama, ultimate peacefulness or nirvana. And then you will be no longer tortured by the mental defilements. You will be free from the torment, torture or the mental defilements, nirvana, and nidro. You will have no more worry and sorrow and limitation. So following the Buddha's guideline and teaching, the Venerable Teisa, as he expected, became fully enlightened while the Buddha was present. So for yogis here, also Sierra encouraged to develop the continuous mindfulness. And also, Sierra wish may you be able to experience Dhamma Piti, the blissfulness of Dhamma experience, and a blissful seclusion, and a seclusion away from the mental defilements and a cessation of suffering. That's all for today. Sadhu, sadhu.